Okay, we're wrapping up this hour, going to turn it right around, and then we're going to the high desert in Arizona. And I can't wait to meet these gals. All right, stay with me. Animal World continues right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
The preceding hour of Martha Norwalk's Animal World was brought to you by Jones & Company Pets. Their goal is happy, satisfied customers enjoying happy, healthy pets.
This is Alternative Talk, 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KLCK, FM 98.9, Digital HD3 Seattle.
Been there, done that? It's time for a change.
Hi, I'm Rob Spears.
And I'm Brenda Michaels, and we're the hosts of Conscious Talk, radio that makes a difference.
If you're ready to engage life, expand consciousness, and ride the wave rather than be bowled over by the incredible changes that are upon us, then join us Monday through Friday at 7 a.m. on KKNW 1150 a.m. or 98.9 HD3 or ConsciousTalk.net, where together we'll forge the new human being.
Pam and Rochelle are Chat with Women.
Remember who you're talking to.
Hello.
Chat with Women.
Listen to Chat with Women to be informed, motivated, inspired.
Don't listen to people who tell you it's never been done before. If I had looked at the SWAT team, it was an all-male team, and thought, you know what, if I had done that, I wouldn't have had the incredible experiences.
Take 1 hour out of your day to learn and grow and change your life.
You're living in that virtual world too much.
That's right. Very virtual.
Come on
world.
Out with us and play.
Every weekday morning at 8, Chat with Women on 1150 KKNW.
When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead, get up, get out of bed, cheer up, the sun is red, live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue, now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin starts bob, bob, bobbing along.
The following hour of Martha Norwalk's Animal World is brought to you by Jones & Company Pets. Their goal is happy, satisfied customers enjoying happy, healthy pets.
Hey, good morning, y'all. I'm Martha Norwalk, and I welcome you to our May Day edition of Animal World. We're here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here at Alternative Talk, AM 1150. You can tune us in on the radio dial. You can tune us in on the internet via streaming audio. That means you can share us with your family and friends around the country, around the world. If they've got internet access, now the best way to pick up the stream is go to the Animal World website. That would be www.marthanorwalk.com. Click on the Listen Live icon in the upper right-hand corner of the homepage. That will click you through to the 1150 KKNW website. Click on Listen Live again. That will bring up the instructions that you need to stream the show. Now, I'm going to give you some contact information here in case you need it. During the rest of the show, if you need to get a hold of us, you can make Scotty run for the phone. In fact, we could talk about him, Gary. He's not here. He's in the other room because he's getting a hold of Dee and Willa right now.
He can still hear us in the other room.
Oh, he can hear us?
Yes.
Oh, then I guess we better keep our
trap shut. So just because he's in the other room.
We better only say nice things.
Well,
of course, I couldn't think of anything not nice
right,
to say
I was
about Scotty.
Say.
And how sweet of that was
I
him to bring you all that
up,
cool Easter stuff
yeah.
for, you know, you and your kids? Yeah. Scotty's a nice guy. We couldn't say ill about him anyway.
No,
so.
I think you're right.
We could probably tease him about something.
Sure.
No, never
That's
mind.
That's what we do best.
Yeah.
Tease one another.
Yeah, well, we do, don't we? We have a good time doing that, and I'm one up. Probably shouldn't remind Gary of that. He kind of owes me one.
Yeah, I know. No, I know.
Yeah, snuck in that Husky fight song. You know,
yeah,
ooh,
I know.
That was a good one. I still savor that one. All right, we're not going to go there.
Don't
but anyway,
worry, I'm not. I'm not.
Okay.
Forgetting.
if during oh no, that's interesting. We I'm going to give you some contact information here because we are contacting the high desert, and it may take a little while to get these phone connections secured. We've got one secured, but we've got two people to talk to, and so Scotty's working on the second one. The first try on the second one looks like it didn't work. So, at any rate, if you would like to call us during the remainder of the show, there might be something specific you want to know from our guests or whatever. The local number, 425-373-5527, 425-373-5527. Toll free is 1-888-298-5569. And of course, you can send us an email while we're on the air to animalworldlive@hotmail.com. animalworldlive@hotmail.com. They haven't messed up our email, right, Gary? We can still do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. So you can still send email. They haven't broken that down.
Mm-mm.
And
that goes anywhere.
Yep. Now, if you are submitting a current events item, please do so via email. And you can do that by going to the Animal World website, marthanorwalk.com. Click on Contact Martha and send me your events via email. It's easier for me to get to the webmaster that way. If you need my help as an animal behavior therapist and trainer, I work either over the phone or in your home with you and your animal friends, and you can send me an email, but I don't work via email, and the best way to get a hold of me is bug my voicemail, and you can reach me at Martha's Canine, Feline, and All Creature Counseling at 360-217-7258, 360-217-7258, and let's see, if you have to mail something to Animal World, the Animal World mailing address is 13517 Woods Lake Road, Monroe, 98272. And let's see. I think that about does it. Oh, and I want to remind you, New Spirit Journal is out new for May, and comes out every first of every month. And the birthday party will be June 4th. I'm excited about that. And you can read it online. If you don't have a subscription and have it mailed to you, or don't have an outlet where you can pick it up for free in your area, you can go to www.newspiritjournal.com, and you can read my column there. You can read the whole paper there if you like. All righty then. I think we're in good shape. Scotty has not returned yet, but it looks like we do have our guests on the phone line. Now, let me tell you a little about Dee and Willa. This is the first time they're joining us here on Animal World, and I've told you they're calling from the high desert in Arizona. These two women are both animal lovers and animal trainers who have always made animals the main priority and motivation in their lives. Dee, this is in their own words. Because Dee and Willa are two little old ladies. I have an objection to that phrase, and which I will be taking up with the two of them here momentarily. And at any rate, Dee and Willa are two little old ladies related by marriage who have known each other for a very long time and have a lot of things in common. About a decade ago, they both faced some very serious health challenges, and the medical community was telling each of them that they probably had less than a year to live. Rather than settle for this inevitable death sentence, they each decided to walk away from the doctors, who gave them very little hope, and set out on a journey to stay alive through natural medicines, natural therapies, and their connections with the natural world, especially relying on their love and nurturing and the healing power of animals. Having already moved through their busy and obligatory years of kids, spouses, family, businesses, and community duties, they decided to throw in together and make whatever time they might have left to be the very best that they could create for themselves and for their own quality of life, rather than being dictated by the conventions and expectations of society. They knew that their survival depended in part on getting out of the city and getting back to nature, eating fresh foods, drinking pure water, breathing clean air, and finding joy in a relationship with plants, animals, and the natural world. Gosh, doesn't that sound like what we all ought to be doing? Oh, yeah. Now, obviously, they both managed to survive, and now they've been living on 40 acres of high mountain desert land in northern Arizona for nearly 10 years. And here's a list of what they're living with. Again, currently they've got five horses, 8, 9, or 10 goats, they're not sure till next week when Petunia has her babies, 4 sheep, 7 chickens, 2 cats, who are really good at their job at keeping the mice population down, and 15 rescue dogs of all assorted breeds, shapes, and sizes, from hound to and Newfie to Chihuahua and Terrihoo. Each of the animals has a purpose, a job, or role, and their own important place in this large, eclectic family. So, without further ado, going to welcome both Willa and Dee. Good morning, Willa and Dee.
Good morning. How are you this
Hi.
Morning?
Hey, Wynn, we've got now, who is that? Whose voice?
This is Willa.
Okay, good morning, Willa.
Good morning.
And you got a chance to meet Scotty.
Yes.
Gary, say hi.
Hello.
Yeah, okay, that's
Hello,
Gary.
Gary.
All right, and then Willa, have we got you too? I mean, Dee,
that
have we got
Willa.
You?
This is Dee.
Okay.
Now, catch me up. Who is Gary?
Gary is our production engineer.
Okay. I talked with Scotty.
Yep.
I wasn't sure who Gary was.
Yeah,
okay.
Scotty's call screener. Gary is production engineer. So Gary's running the show, and basically anything that goes wrong is Gary's fault.
Okay.
And
looks like we've got a good connection on this end, so.
Yeah, both of you sound good.
Great.
If, for any reason, if any of you listening to us are having a hard time, you know, give Scotty a call. Make him run for the phone. You can tell us what's going on. But it sounds like we're good. I am so excited to meet you guys on the air. I am just delighted that we have this opportunity to get to know each other and for me to share you with my audience.
Well, I have to say that was a pretty impressive intro.
You like that, huh?
Oh yeah, I'm happy to meet me.
Yeah. All right. Now, before we go any further,
yes.
I have a bone to pick with you. Now, I don't know who sent. Dee, you sent me all the information.
Okay, I confess it's my fault.
And you're the one that wrote this line that Dee and Willa are two little old ladies.
Oh, wait, let me clarify that.
Yes. Would you please tell us how old are you?
In the 60s, late 60s. And every one of these gray hairs have been well earned.
Well,
we are little and we are old.
Well, now,
I see
wait
absolutely
a minute.
Nothing wrong with that.
I'm
with
too
that
close to that age, and there is no way I'm ready to call myself a little old lady. And Gary, if you don't even think about that.
Maybe little.
You know, what? Now say that again.
I don't. Maybe little.
All right, I'll accept little because
okay.
I am on the small side. At least so people tell me.
Mm-hmm.
That's physically on the small side.
Well, let's just say, Martha, that we can't throw as many hay bales as we used to.
All right, I'll go with that because I can't throw as many as I used to either. So we'll go with that. All right, now
you know a nice farmhand would be really wonderful.
Yeah. I'm fascinated here, Dee, because when I'm reading about the two of you, I'm reading about your background, Dee.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it almost could be about me.
Yeah. Well, my story is not that unusual. Willa's, on the other hand, is a whole different ballpark.
Right. Well, we'll talk about you and me, Dee, because we're kind of simple. Then we'll get to Dee. Then we'll get to Willa. But it says, look, Dee grew up mostly in the suburbs of Phoenix, with her parents tolerating her propensity for collecting nearly every kind of animal one can get away with in a city backyard. From dogs and cats to hamsters, guinea pigs, rabbits, snakes, birds, and eventually a couple of horses, who usually lived a few miles away. And because Dad thought they were too big for the backyard and messed up his lawn. I can understand that. I've always said that I felt like I was one of those people with an invisible shingle outside the house that said, any lost wayfaring animal that needs help, stop here. And it sounds like I had all of these critters too. I had a seagull on my porch. I rescued a seagull from the beach. I wouldn't leave the beach without bringing it home. I had a bat. I had a bat. So that's absolutely exactly my upbringing. And then
you know that
mm-hmm.
That reminds me that one time I decided I needed to rescue the catfish from the canal.
Oh, no!
Because they were, well, they were draining the canal. They had pulled all the water out to do some repairs and stuff.
Where was this?
In Phoenix area.
In Phoenix, okay.
I didn't realize they had canals in Phoenix. Oh, yeah, that's how they move a lot of the water source.
Ah, okay.
And about the only water you can find other than golf courses and swimming pools.
Yeah.
But, you know, these fish were just in these little tiny puddles, and I felt so bad for them, so I went and put them in a bucket and brought them home and just set them on the porch until they filled the canal back up and I could go take them back where they belong. But, you know, Willa is the one that has the stories about hanging the shingle out where it's any lost animals come knock on the door and we'll let you in. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
She's very notorious for that one.
You know, but just so I want to establish, you know, kind of our connection because, you know, your obsession with, you started dog breeding and training and showing as a teenager. So did I.
Yes.
I mean, I started before. I trained my first dog in sixth grade. Don't know about you. And then you graduated to confirmation handling and obedience trials. So did I.
Right.
You managed your own in-home dog training service for many years. Me too.
Did you?
Uh-huh. Well, I still do.
Oh.
Well, I was co-owner of the largest obedience and training organization in this area for a few years. And, but I've had my own counseling service for, I can't even tell you how many years. And then, so, you know, you and me, Dee, we could be sisters.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, and
that's tracking pretty close.
Right. But Willa, on the other hand, holy mackerel, I can't. Are you sure you're only in your 60s, Willa? For heaven's sakes.
The
question is how many lifetimes, right?
Exactly. Now, it sounds like you, where did you grow up? Where did your childhood begin, Willa?
Oh, my goodness. Well, the family had ranches in Nevada and Arizona.
Oh, okay.
And so the family that not only had ranches, but they also had a place in Florida.
Mm.
And the ranches were not just simply cattle ranches, because the family grew hay and converted a dairy farm for divisional construction for private homes, and the primary thing was that we had movie animals.
Now, did you raise and breed these movie animals?
Well, one member of the family raised large cats.
Ah, okay. So the lions and tigers?
Right at the edge of the Everglades.
Mm.
And another member of the family, all of the ranches were rather run together, because the ranch that raised alfalfa also did feedlot work. So we custom fed cattle for fattening for commercial purposes. And then in order to make the best profit margin, it was determined that local Mustangs could be utilized for ranch purposes. But once a horse is used on the ranch, it gets beat up pretty good. They wind up with leg injuries and such.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than have them just miserable and always being doctored, they were used for dude strings and hunting camps. So we use them like that for a couple of years, then lease them out, and eventually they get sold into private homes.
So those are the Mustangs you're talking about?
Mustangs, primarily, yeah. And then another uncle raised registered quarter horses, which were shown. And he was pretty well known on the rodeo circuit for bronc riding and bull riding.
Wow, what a childhood. And so because you were raising and training circus animals and movie animals, you apparently spent quite a bit of time around the circuses when you were young.
Yes. And some of the circuses had divisions of that circus that wintered in Florida. And one of the circuses that, you know, circuses over time became obsolete economically. So what happened was they broke up, and individual purchasers, they were purchased individually in sections, in small groups.
The animals?
And then turned into all-purpose circuses.
Ah,
so
okay.
Cole Brothers originally was part of Ringling Brothers.
Oh, okay.
And Cole Brothers is who we worked with primarily.
I see.
Although we did, I wound up training dogs for dog acts for individuals that had dog acts in circuses and in the movie industry.
Did you actually work with the big cats?
Yes.
Hmm. Very interesting. Now, I'm wondering, now, you had somebody in your family raised the big cats.
Right.
Now, did you then maintain ownership of them and then take them and work with the circuses, or did you, like, sell them to the circuses?
Primarily, they were leased for movie work.
Leased for movie work. Oh, okay.
Large cats were leased for movie work. And early on, very early in the 50s, a lot of the animals were kept for breeding purposes to be raised to hand raise and bottle feed the larger animals. But by the early 60s, it was realized that there were a lot of animals out there that required rescuing because people would, and believe it or not, people in New York City and in Miami and in L.A. would buy large cats as kittens.
Yeah.
And raise them up in their apartments and homes and not have a clue.
And that doesn't work.
No. So what wound up happening is that we wound up rescuing these animals and then giving them a job.
Ah.
So from about 1962, 63 on to date, all of the animals that we used were rescue animals. And we got to be known for that. People began calling us. And different organizations, and we wind up taking animals, assessing them, and going from there.
And I'm wondering, since your family raised a lot of these big cats and leased to the circuses and that sort of thing, you know, there are not that many circuses left, but of course Ringling Brothers is still pretty big, and they're all over the place. I'm wondering how you feel about these, because I think you not only have had experience working with the big cats, but haven't you also worked with elephants?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. For a very short period of time. Actually, what I did with elephants was behavioral modification and reintroduction into groups of other animals.
Hmm. So my question is, you know, how do you feel about these animals being used in circuses today?
Well, to be honest, I haven't had contact with the movie industry or circus people in some time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's good and bad in every industry.
Okay.
I think you'll find, and you mentioned dogfighting earlier.
Yes.
I think one can find that if they look at the psychological profiles of today's society, there's a lot of anger.
Oh.
And unfortunately, many, many people turn that anger inside, so it builds up.
Yep, you're right.
And they don't realize how it becomes released in a way that they feel they have control. So a lot of times what an individual feels they have control over is something that can't fight back or something that they feel more superior of.
Mm.
9 times out of 10, that's an animal.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we see that in everyday life. It isn't simply in movie or circus industry.
Because, I think both you and Dee have spent a lot of time in rescue and rehab work with all kinds of different animals.
Yes, we have. And we've also done a lot for assistance animals. We've trained trained animals for specialty needs, especially dogs, but also horses. So we see good and bad. You know, there's good and bad in everything. There are always two sides to everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But animals certainly can play a large part in reintroducing humans back to their roots and back to getting in touch with their own feelings and with getting in touch with nature. But I think you'll find, as far as abuse goes, abuse is everywhere. Abuse is in homes. It's with children. It's with animals. Anger is anger.
Yep.
And if an individual doesn't look at what am I doing and why, then the abuse continues.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I know that I won't go to circuses just because I can't support those animals in captivity. It doesn't work for me, so I don't give them my money.
Two sides to that too. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in bringing animals out of the wild for the sole purpose of entertainment. But at the same time, and I'm really not an advocate of breeding wild species or native species that were initially in the wild for entertainment or for domestication. Yet at the same time, some of the animals have played a large part in development of this nation, such as horses, donkeys, mules, and dogs. So we have domesticated and bred them for a specific purpose. But as far as hunting, I believe in hunting for one's own purpose. If I eat wild game,
sure.
I'm not going to hunt for the fun of killing something. I don't find fun in that.
Right.
And I'm certainly not a trophy hunter. I don't need something hanging on my wall to prove that I'm okay or that I'm superior.
Yeah, I just so
when it comes
that,
to the use of meat, clean meat, yes, I hunt. Right. Am I going to go out and trap a mountain lion to bring it home and use it for commercial purposes? No.
Yeah, well, I understand that. Dee, you wanted to add something?
Well, I was just thinking that we maybe a couple of months ago we came across a movie about a circus family, and I don't remember the name of the family or the movie right now, but they had been in circuses way back to court jester's time, and it was really hitting the end of the road where, you know, the circuses were fizzling out and they weren't sure they could keep making any money, but it was very in-depth in showing how much they loved their animals and cared for their animals, and that these animals were very much a part of their family and they were treated very well. So as Willa was saying, you know, there's the flip side. There's the good and bad in most things. Dog fighting, I wouldn't agree that I could find any good side in it.
Yeah.
But as far as something like circuses, there are those people that treated them very well, and then there's some that obviously don't. But you'll find the same in the high-dollar horse competition ring. You look at those horses, and you think they're very well taken care of, or the flat-track horses, or dog show competition. I knew a dog breeder that had Cocker Spaniels years ago, and in order to make sure that those dogs' coats never got soiled, never got broken, nothing happened to them, those dogs lived in their crate constantly.
Yep.
I mean, they were not allowed to be dogs. They were like trophies that were kept on the wall.
I think it
comes back to our own ethics and our own sensitivities about other living beings, you know, as to how something is treated.
Absolutely. Now, do I remember correctly? I'm not sure where I got this. I think it might be you and I might have been chatting on the phone. But am I remembering correctly that the two of you both have Native American blood running through your veins?
Yeah, well, yes, that's true. I was raised in the suburbs, and there's a great deal of Native people or that mixed bloods or Métis people who were taken away from their tribes and who don't know anything about their heritage, and it was a matter of shame and don't tell anybody that you're part Native because, you know, you'll be discriminated against or harassed. And so a lot of culture has been lost. So I was raised in a dominant mainstream society, but my mother's father is Apache.
And I would think that connection with you two has a lot to do with the kind of life that you live. Because you've described...
Instinctively, as a part of who I am in my spirit, perhaps. What I'm trying to say is I was not raised with that culture at all. But I've always been called back to it from my own spirit. So I would say, yes, that is true for me, but we are all part of the circle of life, no matter what color your skin or your hair is. And at this point in the position of this planet, we all need to find that connection real quickly here before we destroy the whole thing.
Yeah, isn't that the truth?
And so it doesn't matter if you're Indian or not. You're still part of the circle of life, and we all need to get that.
Yeah, it's interesting to me, or fascinating, the way that you describe the way that Willa moves on the land around the animals, and you described her incredibly, but you say she's a true horse whisperer, and Willa, your ability to sense and understand animals is apparently quite profound.
But she grew up with much more of native culture, and her brothers taught her how to walk with the animals in the wild, so she was gifted with a lot more of that direct connection than I was.
So you were raised with that kind of stuff from the beginning, Willa?
Yes, yeah. But, you know, it's a matter of getting away from the noise. And if someone makes a decision to walk outside and take a look at the sky and begin to observe and then look around, and watch the surroundings. Walk out into a park or the forest and look down and take a look at what's around you. And it's amazing. Once you get rid of the noise, mm-hmm. and the noise in your head and the noise around that you're surrounded with in daily life in today's society, an awful lot can be learned from observation. You can walk outside just before the rainy season and watch the ants, and the ants will build little mounds up around their holes, and the higher the mounds and the more sticks in the mounds, the sooner the rain is coming, and the more rain that you know will be running across the land. So as a matter of fact, just walking with the animals is just a matter of observation and listening and allowing oneself to open up and become that animal.
Oh, that makes sense. And well, that's interesting. So you watch the ant hives. When they start to get higher, you know that water's coming.
Yes. And if you look outside, have you ever noticed trees, the leaves on trees, and especially on weeds, milkweeds, before the rain, within a few hours of rain?
They turn inside out.
Exactly.
Okay, now, my dad taught me this, and I don't know where he learned it, but I always watch the deciduous trees, and before it's going to rain, Scotty's looking at me like I'm nuts, Willa. you watch the leaves on the trees and how they, when they turn over, so that their underside is facing outward, and so it's actually a different color usually, but when that happens, It's doing that just before it's going to rain.
Right.
Yeah.
One of the exercises, I worked with a lot of young kids that up through teens that came from low-income families, and there was a lot of drug abuse and alcohol abuse. And I would bring these kids out to the ranch and just turn them loose for the first day. Mm-hmm. And say, here's a pencil and paper, and here's a camera. Take pictures of whatever you want to take pictures of, and write down what you see.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the first day, they had no idea what they were looking at or writing down, but it was rather revealing, some of the things they would write and the descriptions, because mm-hmm. these were kids that came out of the city,
yeah,
and out of abuse. So they had a lot of anger, they didn't have self-confidence, they had a lot of issues. But by the end of the week, if I would give them an assignment, and I'd say, find anthills, find birds' nests, find holes in the ground that animals lived in, and draw the hole, and then wait and watch to see what animal went in there. And by the end of the week, it's amazing what these kids would have learned about the the natural environment.
Oh, yeah.
Could I insert something right here for a second?
Sure.
I just want to mention that there's a program that has a university certification possibilities for nature therapy and eco-psychology and things like that, as well as offering simple courses online that people can do that offers exercises and guidelines like this for walking people through how to find a connection with nature so that, people who go out to the woods on the weekend and run their ATVs all over and make a lot of noise and dig up the dirt and get some thrill out of it, or that this finds a different way for people to actually find connection and respect and begin communicating and become part of the natural environment. And this program is called Project Nature Connect, and it has been run by Michael Cohen, who is from the Northwest. I'm not sure if he's in Washington or Oregon, but he's been doing this for, God knows, 30 years or better, and he's acknowledged by the UN Council with the environmental programs, and he started some fabulous stuff. There are eco-psychology degrees, and you can get degrees in nature therapy for working with people and animals. But online, you can walk through courses. If you go, well, I don't know how to talk to a tree, or, I go outside and I look at a rock or I look at an animal, what am I going to do with them? How do I communicate or find some connection? He has a really wonderful program for sensibly walking people through how to do exercises to begin to get that sensibility and that connection. It's called Project Nature Connect. You can find it online.
Project Nature Connect?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that sounds like a fabulous program, because I know I was just thinking about, I've moved back out to the country. I'm not 7,000 miles up in the high desert and all 40 acres, but, I'm much farther away from the city than, from where I grew up. And I can remember when Scotty came out to build my cat run, the one comment that he made consistently was, "It's so quiet here." And
yes.
Yeah, and it's like, it's so quiet that in the evening, the crickets and the frogs can be deafening.
Yes.
They're so loud.
Yeah.
Now, again, I'm thinking about that. The high desert of Arizona, do you guys have frogs and crickets in the desert?
Toads.
You have toads. Do they croak?
They sprout with the rain.
Oh.
They're dormant underground for years at a time.
Really?
Oh,
I didn't
yeah.
know that.
And then when it rains, we have these sinks, these areas that are lower in that have rock bases.
And they fill up with water?
They fill up with water, and the toads are just deafening. And they just appear one day within 12 hours.
So they're in a dormant state underground somewhere.
Yes.
And then the rains come in, and then all of a sudden they come out?
Yes.
How
and then
cool
when
is
the
that?
Rains go, they disappear.
When the rains go, they go back dormant underground, huh? Wow.
Yes.
We have to be careful about them, though. They are toxic to the dogs if the dogs bite them. So we're really careful to pick them up and carry them miles away from here.
That's right. Isn't it toads that I seem to remember some document? Yeah, that people sometimes lick them to get high.
Are you serious?
Yeah, no, Scotty's not. You've seen those reports too.
Yeah, it was college kids were doing it.
Yeah, we're licking the toads.
Yeah.
Oh, I have to tell you a story about that.
Yeah,
it isn't about toads, but I had a group from ASU come out, and they were do a trail ride. So I couldn't get them out of the corrals, and they kept wanting to brush the horses. And
these are college kids from Arizona State.
Yeah, college kids from ASU.
Okay.
A group of them came out to where we used to have. I was partners with a friend that is actually a movie cowboy and stunt person.
Uh-huh.
And so we had we did trail rides and tours and ecology tours. And this group of young people came out, and I kept saying, "Come on, guys, let's go. We're getting into lunchtime here. I thought you wanted to go for a horseback adventure." And they just kept brushing the horses, and I'd go off, and they'd be walking around the corrals, and the next thing I know, they're cleaning the corrals. And I kept thinking, well, wait a minute. you know, this is great, but this isn't what you paid us to go for a ride. Came to find out that the bags that they had brought, they were collecting mushrooms that grew in horse manure that evidently had a psychedelic effect.
Mm-hmm.
So they were coming out, paying for a horseback adventure, never going on a ride, cleaning the corrals, collecting mushrooms.
Because they're collecting mushrooms.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Yeah, kids will be kids, I guess, when they're in college.
You know, we were talking about tracking, about paying attention to the animals.
Yeah.
And we had a porch that overlooked, on the office, that overlooked the creek bed. And we'd see wild horses come down every now and then. And we were kind of short. We had some big rides and big movies coming up, and we were pretty short. So I kept saying, Chuck, we got to go find some more horses here. We really need some more horses. And we tended to play tricks on one another now and then.
Mm-hmm.
So we were a bunch of practical jokers, actually. So I'm sitting up on the porch one day, and Chuck's saying, you know, if we could find about 6 or 7 head, pretty reasonable, we could turn them over and get them riding comfortably and safe by the time we had these movies to do in the big rides, because we were also taking the cast and crew on horseback adventures, besides providing horses for the movie set. And so I was sitting up on the porch one day, and I thought, you know what, I owe Chuck one. So I'm sitting there with the binoculars, and I'm thinking, wow, look at that paint. Holy mackerel, look at those horses down by the creek. They're just amazing. This is what we should do. We should have these horses. They're really colorful, and they're stout. They have a lot of bone. And, gosh, I don't know. I don't think they belong to anyone. No brands. And they were on open range. So Chuck kind of got an earful of this and got excited about it and thought, you know, that's a good idea. So I handed him the binoculars, and he said, oh, that, you know, they're not here. They're gone. And I said, oh, yeah, they were going up over the hill as I handed you the binoculars. So he said, well, keep an eye out for them. So the next morning, I'm sitting up on the porch, and I'm looking at the binoculars, and Chuck comes out, and I said, say, you know those horses we saw yesterday? They're not on open range. They're on private land, and the owner of that ranch said they're feral. We're welcome to them.
Hmm.
So Chuck said, well, let's go saddle. I said, well, I've got some things to do. You go saddle up and see if you can find them. So Chuck got busy and didn't have time till the next day. Well, that night, we had a horse hoof and leg that we got from a vet that we did educational things with. It had been preserved.
So I
went down that night by the creek, and I made hoof prints to look like it was 5 or 6 horses going down to water, and the tracks would go up to the hard ground and then disappear in the rocks. So the next morning, Chuck comes up and says, you know, have you seen the horses this morning? I said, yeah, they went down to water. You ought to saddle up and see where they go. So Chuck saddled up, and we did this for 3 days. And for 3 days, every day he's going down there looking for horses.
And every day you've been putting the horse prints down there at night?
Well, Chuck never did find those doggone horses.
Did you ever tell him what you did?
Yeah, eventually we did.
It's kind of like me fooling Gary. Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah. That's so. Are there wild Mustangs in the high desert of Arizona where you are now?
Not where we are now, but BLM is doing their best to destroy all of the wild horses.
I didn't know where you were going with that, but I was going to ask you about that, and I think I'm going to have you hold that thought because I need to take care of advertisers and sponsors. So we're going to put you two on hold. We'll do that, and then we will come back. More Dee and Willa straight ahead right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Oh, it's me. Hey, since 1978, Puget Sound area animal owners have been able to depend on Jones & Company Pets for all of their animal care needs. At Jones & Company, their spacious store allows room for everything you need for your animal companions. You can find foods, accessories, fish supplies, supplements, cleaning products, and a whole lot more. The store within a store concept makes it easy to find the right products for your dog, cat, fish, bird, or exotic animal friend, and Jones & Company rigorously trains their staff so they can easily answer all of your questions. Now go to the Jones & Company website, jonesandcompanypets.com, check out everything that's on sale, and then you'll know it's worth a trip to Jones & Company. You'll find them on State Avenue in Marysville. Give them a call at 360-658-7817. At Jones & Company Pets, their goal is happy, satisfied customers enjoying happy and healthy pets.
This new year, give your dog, cat, or ferret the gift of great health naturally. Make NuPro all-natural supplements an essential part of your pet's diet. NuPro makes an awesome gravy sure to please. This gravy provides fresh nutrients for a beautiful, silky skin and coat, a strong immune system, and a healthy digestion, among other wonderful benefits. NuPro's joint support formula is perfect for working dogs, large breeds, and especially seniors. So go with NuPro, your pet's best friend for over 20 years. Go to NuProSupplements.com for more information. That's NuProSupplements.com.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
The Spirit Weight, a tribute, a treasure, a timeless reminder of a beloved pet or person no longer with us. Spirit Weights are stunning, egg-shaped art glass memorials, hand-blown and signed by Mark Boutte in his Camino Island glass studio. Spirit Weights are beautifully crafted with hollow centers to hold a small amount of cremation ashes, sealed forever in a timeless glass memorial. Go to spiritweight.com to read about Spirit, the inspiration, see design options, and get a Spirit Weight order form. The Spirit Weight, a unique, distinctive, and beautiful blown glass memorial.
Karma specialist and founder of Metaphysical Mothering, Ramit Alexis, is nurturing, powerful, and phenomenally gifted. Her books and personal one-on-one phone sessions can change your life forever. And now she's channeled the Mary Magdalene Reiki Healing Energy Portal. Learn about this membership and how to get exclusive contact with her at her website, robinalexis.com. Robin invites you to register for her weekly newsletter and share your comments and experiences in her blog and forum with her and other community members at robinalexis.com. Robin uses her ability as a medical intuitive and a metaphysical healer to assist you in removing blockages so you can experience life more fully. She is a medium, and she can talk to your spirit guides and angels, and she's adept at doing all this over the phone and through the website at robinalexis.com. You can call her for a private session at 360-457-2993, and you can email her at robin@robinalexis.com.
1150kknw.com. It's why they invented the Internet. We think. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Hey, y'all, Martha Norwalk, and sorry to say we're winding down the second hour of this week's edition of Animal World, but we're here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150, except, of course, for today and next week, we are preempted by sporting events at 1145. All right, well, we are right now, we're in the high desert of Arizona, and we're talking to Dee and Willa, and let's see if they're both still with us. Willa, are you there?
Yeah.
And Dee, are you there?
I'm right here. I'm just getting a cover for Chauncey because he seems to be a little chilly.
Now, one is Chauncey? Is he one of the ones that just got neutered?
Still, yes, still in recuperation from his doctor's visit. Here, Chauncey, here's a blanket.
All right. Now,
good boy.
Do either of you guys know anything about opossums?
A little bit.
Because we got an email here. You will recognize it's from Franny. She says, Martha, Dee, and Willa, I'm so excited that Dee and Willa are on the show today. She says, my situation, there's an opossum that comes to my back deck at least three times a week. He or she mostly eats the sunflower seeds I put out for birds. I'd noticed chewed up husk on my desk for more than a year, on my deck, I think, for more than a year before realizing it was done by the opossum. This is in the daylight, so I'm concerned. I thought opossums were nocturnal creatures. Is this normal to see one in the daylight? So, do you know?
Hi, Franny.
Yeah.
This is Dee. Just wanted to say hi, but I think Willa probably has a better answer to that than I do.
Well, it's not common, but it's not a problem. And a lot of times, possums that have young will be bolder and move around more, looking for nourishment.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about when I was at my farm, which was, you know, in Monroe where I am now. I can remember going out in the late afternoon and finding a possum inside my squirrel feeder on more than one occasion.
Oh,
Of which I could walk right up to the squirrel feeder and say, get out, and he'd said no.
Yeah. Yeah, they look pretty ferocious.
Yeah, they don't move very fast.
No.
But it sounds like, I think you're okay, Franny.
Yeah, I don't see a problem with it.
Yeah, she said, one day I came face to face with this critter. The opossum slowly climbed up a tree and waited to see if I would leave. When I didn't, it climbed slowly like a panda bear to the top of the tree out of sight.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say they do move slowly like that.
Yeah, yeah, they're interesting. They're really interesting animals.
Yeah, I passed a roadkill opossum on the way down to the studio today. I did not have time to stop, but I've learned from rescuers that it's a good idea when you see a possum that's been hit by a car at this time of year to check them to see if they don't have live babies in their pouch.
Yeah, yeah. Also, there is a large possum rescue outside of Seattle.
There's a possum rescue outside of Seattle? I didn't know that.
Yeah, there is outside of Seattle. It's run, in fact, if you check with any of the pet stores in Seattle, they're familiar with it, and they usually have information in regards to it.
Well, how could that? I've never heard of that.
Yeah, in fact, I've known several people that raise possum rescues, and the vets a lot of times will call. People will bring possums in that they thought were dead because they were startled, and they get to the vet's office with this box, and the possum is alive.
So they sometimes go sort of comatose and in shock or something?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, when they're frightened, their blood pressure drops.
They play possum.
And their
heart
rate drops.
They play possum, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense. Well, I want to get, before I forget, before we went to break, we were talking about the Mustangs, and you were making mention of the BLM, which is the Government Bureau of Land Management Agency.
Yes.
And so, tell from your perspective, what's going on?
Well, there's still a battle going on, but BLM doesn't seem willing to give any slack, and I think a lot of that has to do with the pressure from cattlemen. Cattlemen have a very large lobby,
yeah,
and with a great deal of funding,
mm-hmm.
And the federal lands have been opened up for open grazing. So for minimal cost, a rancher can graze large amounts of animals, have very large herds for very little money, which elevates their profit margin.
Uh-huh.
Now, what's happened now, because of most ranches being pushed out, most independent ranchers, there are very large corporate ranchers. And the ranches, the large corporate ranches, run the type of operation that also requires a large write-off, economic write-off for tax purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So it behooves them to maintain the lobby to continue to graze their livestock on open lands and push out the wild Mustangs. But Bria can tell you more. Bryce, I can't think of his name, Bryce Davidson wrote an article for the newspaper in Montana. And Bryce came from a ranching family, actually from Kansas, that shot wild Mustangs. They were Mustang hunters. And Bryce actually now is working, he and his family of this generation are working on maintaining the wild horses and fighting for putting the articles into effect that will balance the numbers of Mustangs for what is available in terms of natural resources. Now, Bryce is not against open grazing. He just wants enough left for all wildlife.
Yeah, and that, and I'm glad that you related all of that, because it's exactly what I feel is going on. We have these powerful, huge ranchers that pretty much get to graze their cattle on federal land for free. And of course, the Mustangs need to graze and eat grass too, so they want the Mustangs out of there so there's more grass for the cattle.
Yeah.
And oh.
Dee can tell you more. I don't know if she's read the articles by Bryce Davidson, but she's familiar with some other programs around the country and has worked with them, and also about a rancher up here who is doing a beautiful job in maintaining the balance. And I can't think of her name right now, but she was a school teacher and generationally part of the Peace, P-E-A-C-E family that were homesteaders in Arizona. Dee, do you remember what was her name?
Are you talking about Wink?
Yeah, I'm talking about Wink Krigler. Yeah.
And that's the Diamond X, isn't it?
Yes.
Up near, they're way up by Alpine and Nutrioso up in that area. They've done a great deal as far as environmental restoration and riparian areas and rotational grazing and trying to restore the land and graze animals on it in such a way that it actually nurtures the land instead of destroying it, which Will is pretty much an expert on this rotational grazing stuff because of her uncle. But what I wanted to mention is the Return to Freedom Horse Sanctuary, which is in California, and they have a very large nationwide organization movement working with Congress and confronting BLM and trying to deal with these issues. Truthfully, not making all that much headway because the cattle lobby has a lot of clout and a lot of money. But there are a lot of people involved in this organization trying to preserve the Mustang. So Return to Freedom is a wonderful organization to talk to about that issue.
Oh, good. Thanks for that.
If you ever get a chance to have them on the show, you'll get a lot more of the detail of what's actually going on. Although, of course, they try to be fairly careful about what they say, too, because they're trying to negotiate the issues here.
Sure. Well, I made note of that. Now, speaking of...
I just wanted to mention one thing, which Will can clarify more specifically. But horses and cattle are not in competition for the grazing range, and saying that, well, the horses are going to eat up all the grass and then there won't be anything for these big fat cows is absolutely ludicrous.
Yes. Thank you.
Well, it can take it from there with the rotational grazing concept.
But before we do that, since we're talking about locations here, Scotty wanted me to ask you, do you guys live anywhere close to the Superstitious Mountains?
No.
Okay. That's lower desert. Down further south, kind of east of Phoenix, and we're up in the north end of the state. We're up about 7,000 feet, and that's, I don't know, maybe 2,000 or something down there.
Yeah,
so 7,000 feet, and you sent me some photographs this morning, Will, and I didn't get a chance to study them, but I looked at it. It looked like that you guys are out in the middle of nowhere, and it's just flat and goes forever.
That's it.
Is that it?
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah, yeah. And that was a beautiful grass here. The thing about the land up here is that it's a beautiful scenery. If you drive through it or if you're a realtor, you can go, wow, look what a gorgeous place this is. But the land itself, the ecosystem is very, very fragile. And any changes that you make to the land, even if you drive through the field once, it's going to take years for that track to repair because it's so fragile, so dry, the dust blows away, it's hard to get things to grow. And so I know I sent you some pictures that had lots of grass and Spirit was out there grazing in the field. That was one of our unusually wet years where we had a lot of grass. But it doesn't typically look like that, and it all blows off really easy. So the cattle demolished this land very quickly with their heavy hooves and pulling up everything in sight.